Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Scope of the Federal Court's Power to Adjudicate Cases Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On December 3, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Genesis Healthcare Corporation v. Simchick. This case concerns the scope of the Federal Court's power to adjudicate cases. The question is whether a case becomes moot and must therefore be dismissed when a lone plaintiff receives an offer from all defendants to satisfy her claims in full. To discuss the case, we have Albert Lin, who's a partner at Wiley Ryan, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Lin.
So I'm going to talk about Genesis Healthcare Corporation versus Simchick. And before I get started, I should give a little bit of background about the statute that's at issue here. 29 U.S.C. Section 216B of the Fair Labor Standards Act permits a plaintiff to bring a collective action on behalf of himself and other similarly situated employees for alleged violations of the FLSA. But unlike a class action under Rule 23 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, which binds either all members of the class or those who do not opt out, a 216B collective action binds only those employees who affirmatively opt in. Specifically, Section 216B specifies that no employee shall be a party plaintiff to any such action unless he gives his consent in writing, and the consent is filed in court. So this case, on a writ of certiorari to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, concerns the ability of a defendant to moot such a collective action suit under the FLSA by offering full relief to the named plaintiff before any other employees have opted in. Two key legal principles are at play here. The first is the sort of threshold question, whether an offer of such full relief to an individual plaintiff can moot that plaintiff's claim as a general matter. And second, assuming that this is the case, whether a defendant specifically in a 216B collective action could moot that collective action before any other employees have been given notice by offering judgment to the individual named plaintiff. A key dispute, which I'll come back to later, is whether the first and more general question about mooting an individual claim is properly before the court. So let's turn to what happened in this specific case. Respondent Laura Simchick was employed as a registered nurse at a facility owned by petitioners. She alleges that the petitioners unlawfully denied wages by automatically deducting 30 minutes per shift for meal breaks, even when she and other similarly situated employees performed compensable work during their breaks. She filed a complaint in December of 2009 under 216B on behalf of herself and all similarly situated persons. Now, the way courts have come to adjudicate 216B collective actions is a two-step process, and that's somewhat important here. And the first is a step called conditional certification, where the plaintiff needs to make a sufficient preliminary showing under standards that are somewhat disputed amongst the courts that she is indeed similarly situated to the other employees on whose behalf she claims to bring the case. If so, the court enters what's called conditional certification, facilitates notice to these other similarly situated employees, and then wait to see if anybody opts in. If anybody opts in, then you end up in the second step, which is traditionally triggered by a motion from the defendant to, quote, decertify the case. And the question there is whether each of the individual opt-in employees is in fact similarly situated to the named plaintiff. Now, what happened in this case is that the petitioners made an effort to moot the matter by offering judgment to respondent Simchick before any of the certification steps had occurred. So on February 18th, approximately 2 months after the complaint was filed, they both answered the complaint and served an offer of judgment under Rule 68 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. Now, Rule 68 is a rule that governs certain types of settlement offers, and what it does is, if the offer is accepted by the plaintiff within 14 days and the court is appropriately notified, the clerk must enter judgment. Now, if it's not accepted, the offer is considered withdrawn, and evidence of the unaccepted offer is generally not admissible. Here, petitioners offered $7,500, and in a cover letter accompanying their offer, offered reasonable attorney's fees and costs as entitled by law. Now, respondent Simchick did not timely respond by March 4th, and the district court, after that point, not knowing that there had been an offer made, issued an order allowing 90 days for discovery, after which the respondent would be allowed to move for conditional certification. What happened then is within 2 weeks, the petitioners moved to dismiss for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, arguing that the offer judgment deprived respondent of any personal stake in the litigation, And then the court, acting on that motion, dismissed with prejudice because of the offer of judgment that had been made, concluding that the case was moot. Significantly, the court did not actually grant judgment to respondent Simchik or award her any of the fees or costs or judgment that had been offered. On appeal, the Third Circuit reversed and remanded. They started by saying that under circuit precedent, an offer of complete relief will generally moot a plaintiff's claim because there is no personal interest remaining in the outcome of the litigation. However, the court reasoned that these conventional mootness principles do not fit neatly into the collective action context, where the named plaintiff purports to represent an interest that extends beyond his own. The court explained that if eventually another employee opted into the action, the petitioner's offer of judgment addressing only respondents' individual claims would then no longer fully satisfy all the claims in the action. And so the question for the Third Circuit was whether an FLSA collective action becomes moot when, first, the putative representative receives a Rule 68 offer in full satisfaction of her individual claim prior to moving for conditional certification, and second, no other potential plaintiff has opted into the suit. Looking to cases concerning Rule 23 class actions, in particular a Third Circuit case called Weiss, the court determined that this action could not be moot. In Weiss, the Third Circuit had previously concluded that a Rule 68 offer of judgment before a motion for class certification in a Rule 23 case could not moot the class action because allowing a defendant to use an offer of judgment to, quote, pick off, unquote, an individual named plaintiff would frustrate the objectives of class actions, because it would thereby force multiple separate individual class actions, which the defendants would then individually pick off, et cetera, et cetera. Looking to these principles, the Third Circuit concluded that the same considerations that cautioned against allowing an offer of judgment to impede a class action applied in the FLSA context. And therefore, what the court decided was that the request for certification, even if it comes after the offer of judgment, should, quote, relate back, unquote, to the filing of the complaint. So therefore, the certification motion is treated as if it had been filed simultaneously with the complaint, and therefore had been filed at a time before the defendants attempted to moot the individual lead plaintiff's case, which would preserve a court's ability to rule on certification. The Supreme Court granted certiorari on the following question. Quote, whether a case becomes moot and thus beyond the judicial power of Article 3 when the lone plaintiff receives an offer from the defendants to satisfy all of the plaintiff's claims. Now, briefing on the merits introduced some interesting wrinkles as Respondent Simchik and the United States Solicitor General in support of her attempted to shift the focus of the case and essentially get the case affirmed on a different ground. So let me begin briefly with petitioner's arguments. Petitioners filed a fairly short brief and focused almost entirely on Article 3. Article 3 requires a personal stake in any case or controversy, and in short, there isn't one here. To begin with, petitioners contended respondent had never disputed the mootness of her own individual claim, and therefore the only question here is whether the interests of bystanders, and they pointed out either respondent's counsel or hypothetical and putative claimants, so these other similarly situated employees who had never received notice of the case and never opted into the case, whether the interest of those bystanders would be sufficient. And they argued that they weren't, and the bulk of their brief focuses on two Supreme Court cases, Deposit Guarantee National Bank versus Roper and United States Parole Commission versus Garrity, and pointing out that those cases are narrow, that neither of those cases stands for the proposition that a putative opt-in employee in a collective action case has any sort of interest in that case if the employee has not yet opted in, and also pointing out that both of those cases involve Rule 23, and that, of course, there are, as we've discussed, significant differences between a Rule 23 case and an FLSA collective action. The respondent, in response, began not by addressing the relation back principle and the question whether the entire collective action had been mooted, but by challenging the foundational notion that her individual claim had been mooted by the offer of judgment. As she pointed out, a respondent had never actually accepted the offer of judgment offered by petitioners, and so therefore she had actually not gotten anything to satisfy her claim. she had not received the $7,500 that had been offered or the fees or costs, and therefore she still had a live claim. In a somewhat lengthy footnote, a respondent addresses the question whether she had either conceded the point or failed to properly raise the point, and argued first that she had never agreed that a withdrawn offer could moot her individual claim, and that in any event, these are jurisdictional issues that the court can properly consider, and that the Supreme Court has held that a respondent can seek affirmance of a lower court decision on any ground. On the question on which certiorari was granted, that is, whether the collective action was moot, Simchek responded in three ways. So, assuming that her individual claim was moot, she contends that the collective action would not in any event be moot. First, because Congress deliberately chose a collective action mechanism, and thus petitioner's position would frustrate that legislative objective. Second, the grounds that the Third Circuit adopted, that the relation back doctrine should apply here, because if you do not relate back a certification motion, this is an issue that will essentially permanently evade review. Without applying the relation back doctrine, defendants would be able to consistently pick off individual named plaintiffs, and no 216B collective action would ever reach the conditional certification stage. And then finally, respondent argued that she does indeed still have a personal stake, if not in her own individual claim, then in the collective action. And those personal stakes include her interest in fees for the work on the collective action part of the case, as opposed to her individual claim, and also her interest in an incentive award for being the lead plaintiff in the collective action. The Solicitor General weighed in along similar grounds, also attempting to get this case affirmed on alternate grounds, again challenging the foundational notion that an unaccepted offer of judgment by a defendant can actually moot an individual plaintiff's requested relief. The Solicitor General argued that the legitimate result should be to force the plaintiff to accept the judgment. If it is truly the case that the defendant has chosen to throw in the towel, of course he should be permitted to do so, but what the district court should do is grant judgment in favor of the plaintiff, which would thereby end the case. The SG argues similarly that although the question was not raised, it is something that the court can fairly consider, although the Solicitor General did go on to suggest that to the extent that the court found the question of mootness of the individual claim to be properly at issue, if it was not, the court should at most dismiss the case as improvidently granted and not move on to consider the question on which certiorari was actually granted. The Solicitor General does argue further, though, that if the Supreme Court were to accept the notion that Respondent Simchik's individual claim was not mooted and then would send the case back down, that in the rule to apply in future 216B cases is that the district court should not be permitted to dismiss a case as moot on the basis of an offer of judgment to the named plaintiff until the district court has proceeded through the conditional certification process. The Solicitor General's argument is that 216B grants a plaintiff a, quote, right, unquote, to proceed via collective action, therefore requires the district court to go through the certification process. On the question on which certification was granted, whether the collective action was mooted by the individual claim being mooted, the Solicitor General equivocates quite a bit, but ultimately appears to agree with the petitioners in this case that the relation back doctrine should not apply to 216B collective actions. On reply, the petitioner goes on for a little bit about how this threshold question was not properly raised and that the contentions are in any event meritless. So what happens at oral argument? Well, there are a few good hints from oral argument about what's going to happen in this case. Much of the time at oral argument was spent on the threshold question of the mootness of Respondent Simchik's individual claim. And what is clear from oral argument is that nearly all the justices seem troubled by what happened here. The fact that Respondent Simchik did not actually receive anything, that the case was dismissed with prejudice. It seems that a couple things could happen. The first possibility is that the case could be dismissed as improvidently granted because the issue was not properly raised. And this is something that was suggested by the Chief Justice, who seemed a little bit perturbed and annoyed by respondents' attempt to raise this issue in briefing on the merits. The second possibility, which is something suggested also by the Chief and by Justice Alito, is that the court could treat the issue as conceded, essentially deem Respondent Simchik as having received full satisfaction of her claim, whether the district court properly did so or not, and then move on to reach the broader question whether, or more specific question, whether the collective action was mooted. And then the third possibility seems to be that the court could actually attempt to decide the question under some exception, conclude that the question is properly raised. And if they do actually reach the merits of that question, it does seem that there are few on the court, if any, who think that what the district court did was correct. That in these circumstances where a defendant offers judgment to an individual named plaintiff, that the legitimate course, as the Solicitor General suggests, is to actually grant judgment to the plaintiff. On the more specific question about whether the collective action has been mooted, if the court reaches that question, it seems that it will ultimately be a matter of statutory interpretation. As Justice Breyer pointed out at argument, this is a question about congressional intent and what Congress meant and how important the collective action scheme is to the statute and whether, as Justice Ginsburg put it, Congress intended to grant a right and ensure that collective action process is at least adjudicated. Now, for those people who focus primarily on the text of the statute and tend to read statutes more literally, I think this would be a difficult position to support. It seems that the petitioners have the better argument here, precisely because, or and specifically because, Section 216B expressly states that no employee shall be a party plaintiff to any such action unless he gives his consent in writing, and that the consent is filed with the court. Like all Supreme Court cases, this is an important case, but I do think that it has the potential to be an even more important case if the court is willing to reach the question that respondents and the Solicitor General have attempted to introduce here, the question about whether, as a general matter, a defendant can moot an individual plaintiff's case by offering judgment, even if that plaintiff chooses not to accept it. But even if they don't reach that question, of course, there will be specific implications for the Fair Labor Standards Act and how 216B collective actions will proceed going forward. So we should keep our eyes focused on this case, and we'll see what they decide.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.